The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 103 of The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I'm Sari Kamen.
Sari Kamen came in like a whirlwind today. And this is maybe something that won't really resonate for those of you who don't live in New York City. But Sari, 1 minute. G-Train, go.
Yeah, I just want to give a special shout out to the G-Train today. I live in Carroll Gardens, and I want to thank you, G-Train, for making my commute every weekend on Sunday the most miserable experience ever to get to Bushwick. I want to thank you always for making me late no matter what time I leave the house, and for never showing up and then stopping every other stop. So thanks. Thanks, G. You're a pal.
I really wonder why the G train still sucks, because tons of people live off it now. It's not, I mean, and I'm sure tons of people lived off it before. How is it okay that one train is just, it's like short on cars? Like, you'll queue up to, you know, get into the car that you think you're going to get into, and then it'll pull into the station and you don't realize that it's missing like 10 cars. So then you have to sprint all the way to the other side of the
station. It's just not good for anybody's self-esteem to be riding that train.
I mean, it's the G train. It's kind of like the best name for one of the trains.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it's so, I don't know, Sunday's a special day for the G train.
No, I know. I mean, when they shut down the L, then people get really angry too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, I'm here
bitching about trains.
Yeah.
I used to have that problem though. Now I just am steps away, just steps away from Roberta's here in Bushwick.
Yeah, I'm not moving to Bushwick.
It's okay. It's all right. We don't need you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I know you've also been running around doing a lot of stuff. Last show when we had Element OP on, we were talking about the projects that you've been working on for your master's, for your thesis.
Yeah. I have been running around, but I also want to say that I was actually here yesterday at Roberta's. It was really great. Chef Jonathan Sawyer from the Greenhouse Tavern was in town, and I got to hang out with him for brunch along with Michael Harlan Turkel, the host of The Food Scene, and it's just always awesome to see Jonathan Sawyer on. He's one of the best chefs in, you know, that sort of like Midwestern Rust Belt region, and his restaurants are amazing. And he came stocked with his own vinegar. He makes his own vinegar in his basement. He ferments it all, and it's used on all the products that he sells. So he's a really cool guy, and he also brought beef jerky. And I know Michael Harlan Turkel made some like carbonara beef jerky pizza later on, which I'm sure was delicious.
With vinegar. Totally.
Yeah. As far as my thesis goes, that's going great. I met with Jeffrey Yoskovitz yesterday. He's the founder of Gefilteria, which is this really cool company that makes kind of like artisanal, natural Passover products, as opposed to like, if anyone is familiar with gefilte fish, you probably have an image in your mind of something kind of gelatinous and sort of maybe the spam of Jew food, we might say. So he makes something that I think resonates with people who, you know, want to respect traditions but don't necessarily want to eat things that they don't understand how it works. So he was great, and I saw Adam Rappaport this week at Bon Appetit. He made some major latke situations happen. That was really fun. I talked to Arthur Schwartz, who's known as the food maven. He made Passover walnut cake, which was wonderful. And Gil Marx, he's a James Beard winner, and he wrote the Encyclopedia of Jewish Food. He made something called kremzel, which are like fried matzo meal fritters soaked in honey, which is something that was new to me, but I enjoyed it.
They were I actually was lucky enough to partake in those, and they looked like chicken nuggets.
They did. They looked like General Tso's chicken.
Sure, that too.
Which actually is a Jewish food.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's pronounced shower.
General Tsojevitz. Tsojevitz.
Well done.
Hey.
Well, I'm glad it's going well.
Yeah.
And you're meeting all these people, and I can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted.
In studio today, we have a lovely lady, Elizabeth Jones of Food Book Fair. And Food Book Fair is coming up. It's a festival. It's coming up very, very soon, starting April 25th. So we're going to talk to her after the break. But first, we're going to visit one of our favorite segments. We haven't done it in a while. And
oh, God, I'm excited.
Kind of hoping to bring back Evan some front of house.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
And I'm a little rusty on the front of house front. This is actually something that I experienced. However, it's more... I would love to also hear the story told by the server that also experienced it. It's kind of also a rant on this nasty winter that I can't wait for it to get the hell out of here. So, can we have some front of house music, please, Evan? The cold has gotten to me. I cannot binge watch anything else streaming on Netflix. I'm bored of being in a horizontal position. I'm bored of my apartment. My cat is bored of me. Must go outside to find sustenance. Okay, restaurant X is like 5 minutes away. Do I wear cute coat that is not as warm or sausage casing coat that makes me look pregnant but could withstand any polar vortex temps? Cute coat it is. I'm outside. Should have worn the other coat. You'll survive, just run. And as my frozen legs move at half their normal speed, I begin to lose hope. Out of the corner of my eye, I see something frozen in the ice, snow, garbage mound on the curb. It's black and brown and furry. A stuffed animal. A squirrel. Oh my God, is that a puppy? No, not a puppy. Nope, not a puppy, but there's no time to stop. The desire for my own survival is far too great. I must go on. The restaurant is in my sight. The warm glow beckons. That was definitely not a puppy. With eyes frozen, numb feet, and legs tingling as they begin to thaw, I curl up into a booth and I order my food. So not a puppy. My food arrives. Soup and some tail-on garlic shrimp. I stab one of the hot and spicy shrimp with my fork. I cut it in half, bring the bite to my lips, and... No sooner than I can swallow, I'm startled by a banging on the window. I spin my head around towards the sound. That's not how you eat shrimp, a teenage boy yells. With my mouth agape in shock, he continues to rant from the outside, his breath steaming the window. You do not eat shrimp with a knife and fork, he says. As he says this, he mocks dainty fork and knife movements. You pick up the shrimp and you bite it. That's not how you eat shrimp. At this point, the entire restaurant is looking at me and my terrible shrimp-eating skills. Unsure as to whether or not he's got his point across, he decides to come into the restaurant and, I imagine, show me how it's done. He rushes up to my table and passionately insists, "That's not how you eat shrimp." "Okay," I say to him as the manager ushers him out. Slightly horrified, I decide to take his advice. I pick up a shrimp and take it down in one bite. The winter will take you to dark places. Just make sure you know how to eat shrimp. Thank you.
Let's take a break.
Let's take a break here on The Morning After. We're coming back with Elizabeth Jones of Food Book Fair.
Not a puppy.
Today's music is by Hard Bodies on heritageradionetwork.org.
Just gaze into these eyes, and you get it.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your co-host, Sari Kamen.
And I'm Jessica Kiefer.
She's the other co-host. And we're in the studio in the back of Roberta's per use with our very good friend, Elizabeth Thacker-Jones. She just happens to be the founder of the Food Book Fair, which is coming up very soon, April 25th through April 27th. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
You guys don't know this, but she's wearing awesome pants.
You're so kind.
That's the problem with radio.
That's the thing about radio. You don't get to experience the joy that I'm experiencing right now.
And I'm
now.
Not wearing pants, so.
Speaking of joy. what's going on? This is happening soon. How are you?
So soon. Good, good. We're ramping up. We just launched our ticket site.
What is it?
Friday. We have over 20 events happening through those 3 days. We're also doing a bookstore, which is a pop-up at the Wythe in the library space. We're there for a whole week before the fair.
Wow.
So you can come in and check out everything from, you know, the El Bulli, the big tome that, you know, is when are we ever going to get to see that and touch it? And we're talking about, do we have white gloves for this book so that people can come and flip through it? Fiden is sponsoring the bookstore too, so we're going to have some really crazy, beautiful art books.
Wow.
And we're doing some salons in the space too. So we have Erin Gleason. She wrote The Forest Feast, and her story, she essentially lived in New York. She grew up in New York, then she moved into the forests of outside of San Francisco. And so she's now documented her whole life of living essentially with, you know, very little, but what she has, she makes, you know, beautiful food. They all have like 3 to 4 ingredients in her recipes. And so she happens to be in town just that week before the fair. So we get to sort of tap into this amazing talent that maybe we'll just be popping in, you know, for a little talk and to hang out with New Yorkers, and it's going to be good.
That sounds amazing. Let's take a step back. Let's back it up for those who are of our millions of listeners who actually aren't familiar with the Food Book Fair. So why don't you tell us exactly what it is? I know it's in its third year. It's at the Wythe Hotel coming up, but what is it?
Yeah, so, you know, the name is a little bit, it doesn't do it justice, I would have to say, because we think of a book fair and we think of the fairs with books that we had in middle school where, you know, Scholastic would come in.
I loved those.
That was
the
best.
You get your goosebumps.
Yeah, you got all the latest goosebumps came out.
Actually, I think that makes me want to go to the Food Book Fair even more.
I wonder if there's like a goosebumps food issue or something. I don't know, but
no, I'm sorry. Sure. I'm sure there was one based on scary food. There has to be.
Right, right. Yeah,
let's do it.
So we have you know, the intersection between food culture and food systems, which is incredibly vast. That's, you know, what we're about. But we're really, you know, a festival that incorporates all the great writers and all the great eaters and a little bit of activism. We bring in about 60 folks that write about food politics, food's relationship to art, to agriculture, to design, and then of course to cooking and writing. In our, you know, first year, we had a lot of straight up panel discussions. In our second year, we had some cooking demos, because people after the first year were like, where's the food? We're talking about it, but we want to eat it too. And so, you know,
and you're like, don't eat my books.
Yeah. Yeah. So we brought a little more like bites and, you know, we needed, great resources to do that, you know, to bring, food to a space. You have to think about all the different, you know, moving parts. You have to think about the permits and all, you know, the people behind the scenes. You know, it's not just about talking about the issues, but really about tasting them too. So we're bringing that back again this year. We're doing some more like experimental tasting events. We have a guy named Ole Moritzen, who's a biophysicist, but he happens to write about food. And his first book was called Seaweed, and he's Danish. So the book was out in Danish, and they got it translated to English. It's this gorgeous, beautiful book all about the history of seaweed, every kind of seaweed you could ever make, recipes as well. And his book that's coming out on April 15th is called Umami. So we've paired Ole Moritzen, you know, paired as in we've connected Ole and Chez Jose, which is a chef duo, Jose Ramirez Ruiz and Pamela Young. And they're going to make tastes from this book that is incredibly academic. You know, it's the like breakdown of umami, you know, what it really means. And so then he's going to do a lecture. They're going to make some bites. People, you know, will be at in the screening with the wife listening to this PowerPoint presentation. And you get to taste this beautiful food. So
what day is that?
That's on Sunday the 27th. That's our closing event in the evening. Yeah.
So what kind of other panels? Is it other panels and cooking demonstrations this year?
So we're doing some panels all taking place at the screening room at the Wythe. There's no real kitchen there, actually. So any food we bring in, we have to really like improvise. So we have a panel about food and social entrepreneurship. We're doing a film screening. Actually, Lori David, her book is coming out, Family Cooks. This is her second book. And she also just was executive producer. And the film that she helped produce is called Fed Up. And she helped produce it with Katie Couric. It won a Sundance Award. We'll be screening that on Sunday as well in the morning. So there won't be any food to eat there, but there's a lot of, you know, interesting academia and thoughts about politics, and it's about school food, so there's a lot to consume on that front.
Yeah. Oh, I like what you did there with consume. So speaking of academia and school, you are in the food studies program at NYU.
Like you.
Oh my God, me too.
Can we please take a class together?
Yeah. Oh, I'm graduating. yeah. So were you a student first and then started the food book fair? Like, how did that evolution work?
Yeah, I've been working in and around food and kitchens, and mostly like on the marketing and design-y space that is sort of nebulous. But if you're building like big restaurants and hotels, there's a lot of people behind that. So I was working in that space for a while, and then decided to go back to school, and that was like 3 years ago now. So I've been taking classes very kind of sporadically. Like, it's very start and stop. I'm not in school and doing food book fair, and I, you know, work as well. So this semester I'm not taking any classes, but I'll go back next year and I'll take another class. And I do feel like food studies is sort of aged like a fine wine since I started. It's, you know, there are more classes available and there are more students who are, you know, in those classes doing really amazing projects. A lot of students that I started with are now, you know, writing their, or, you know, entrepreneurs, or they're media makers. And I've just been really lucky to be able to take, you know, a couple of semesters off to produce an event, and also to also use that resource. I mean, it's such a tremendous resource to have access to all of our professors, and then all the students that are constantly sort of inspiring what the book fair is about, which in some ways, you know, we follow trends. We're interested in, you know, the fact that we are in Brooklyn, and there are constantly, you know, more and more people that are farming on rooftops, and that are trying to make like the signature cocktail or the signature food item that will be, you know, something. And what does that really mean? You know, why is food be, you know, in fashion, and how does it all connect to like the political side of the equation, which I think is what really interests me at the end of the day. And we're sort of sneaking those political topics under the radar.
Yeah. I mean, you're just so impressive to me, Elizabeth. Like, I think I knew you first as a peer in school, or knew of you through that. And then I found out you were actually the person behind the food book fair, which I had attended last year for Heritage Radio. And, you know, as someone, I mean, you're young, you're, you know,
not that young.
Okay.
I look young. Yeah, exactly.
We're all very young in this room.
Ageless. We're all ageless right now.
Yes.
I'm wearing leopard printed
and rocking
corduroys.
It and totally rocking it.
Ageless.
No, I mean, you know, it's really impressive to like meet a peer and find out someone is so accomplished. And, you know, what I'm just so curious, like, a lot of people have these great ideas and then nothing ever necessarily comes out of it because it feels so overwhelming. And how do you actually execute something like that? So how did you go from someone who's like
pure luck?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's not true at all. There's luck and then there's ambition and, you know,
yeah,
and then there's
luck
like,
and there's timing, you know, a lot of people are like, I'm constantly talking to people that are like, okay, I want to support you. I mean, we barely can pay our staff through sponsorships. And every year, you know, it's like, is food actually really important this year? Do we really want to put our money towards that? Or do we want to support a music festival or like an art fair? It's a constant conversation. I think that, you know, it's really important to talk about food because right now, sort of on a global, like larger scale, there's movement happening, you know, on a political scale. There's also climate change, which is just looming, and we're all thinking, you know, how is this affecting the farmers? If we're really caring about where we spend our dollar and if, you know, how our CSA is going to do come spring, then we have to talk about those issues. So it's, you know, it's a delicate, it's a dance. Mm-hmm. The culture side, you know, through going into food studies when it was like, okay, pick a side, you know, do you want to study food politics or do you want to talk about like how, you know, delicious, you know, the muffins are like at the bakery down the street.
Yeah. I want to explain that real quick what you mean.
Please do.
Yeah. For students in the food studies program at NYU, when you enter, before you've really taken any classes, they ask you to pick, do you want to concentrate in food systems, which has to do more with policy and agriculture, or food culture, which is kind of self-explanatory. You know, there's a lot of writers and media people. I'm in food culture. And were you food systems or food culture?
I'm both.
I started as food systems. So it's like a very hard thing to know, you know, your niche and where you fit. And I think they're actually getting rid of that two-track program because it makes sense.
I was going to say they should be together.
Yeah. I mean, you really can't have one without the other. It's like exactly. They're kind of yin-yang together. So sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, but I think people who go in studying systems, some of them end up, you know, going maybe towards taking classes in other disciplines within NYU because they're more about like economics and like socio-political ideas than maybe sort of what's happening on a very local entrepreneur level. A lot of the projects that come out of NYU are also very entrepreneurial and they're very social entrepreneurial and they look at people, profit, and environment. They, you know, are inherently political. And that's not necessarily when you come into the program, it's not like, okay, this is sort of, you're taking a very like leftist liberal point of view when it comes to like how we're going to change the food system. And I think not necessarily the professors aren't necessarily teaching that in some ways. Like we do read some more rigorous sort of academic, and you know, economic point of views, but at the end of the day, it really becomes about why food studies. Like, mm-hmm. why does food studies, why do we even have this place where we're reading and writing? And what do we do when we graduate, too? I think it's still such a young space to learn about these things. And it deserves more attention than it gets. So it's exciting to hear that they're putting an emphasis around restructuring it.
Yeah, well, that's a, I mean, that's hearsay, but I hope it's true as well. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back more with Elizabeth Thacker-Jones. Thanks for keeping it locked.
We're back here on The Morning After in studio today. Elizabeth Thacker-Jones from Food Book Fair. We've been talking about, you know, the upcoming festival that you're having April 25th through the 27th at the Wythe Hotel. And that is very specifically in Brooklyn, and kind of a conversation that Sarah and I have often, and I have seen in traveling abroad, is this idea of a Brooklyn brand. Mm-hmm. I guess I want to know, is Food Book Fair kind of along the lines of a Brooklyn brand?
Yeah, I mean, we are definitely associated with Brooklyn, you know, in the media and even in just like in, you know, presenting ourselves like in an email to somebody who's never heard of us, like, oh, it's the Brooklyn Foodie Festival. And when it started, it was all about being as outward and global as possible while also being in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So it's not something I'm very proud to be a Brooklynite. I'm also proud to be someone who was born in New York, mm-hmm. but I wasn't born in New York City. I was born in the suburbs. So I've always been thinking about like my location, my, you know, my identity as some, you know, if you're born in New York, chances are, you know, you feel a lot of, you know, connection to the city, and you're also born with a lot of cultural capital. It probably means that you know a lot about restaurants, a lot about food, and you sort of can understand like trends in a way that folks from other places hadn't maybe ever thought about or been exposed to. And I think it's easy to feel really self-conscious in Brooklyn when you're trying to just sort of make something happen that you think sounds like a really great idea. I mean, that's sort of how the book fair came about, and it was never meant to be a big, you know, festival with tons of sponsors and, you know, a lot of media around it. And it's still, I wouldn't say in that realm of festival ranking, if you want to rank it, but like people like to put Brooklyn on, you know, on a pedestal as something. And so I immediately think, well, where does this fall in the realm of everything else that's going on? And, you know, for us, it's important to have an international presence there. You know, like the author who I mentioned earlier, who's coming from Denmark, and we have the Foodiaticals event, which is such, also, you know, very Brooklyn in some ways, because we have five or six indie food magazines. They're all coming from their respective cities, but five or six of them are coming from Brooklyn. And, you know, they're the ones that have been around the longest. But one of the most recent indie food magazines, one of my favorites, called Meat Paper, they'd been around for almost 10 years, and they just decided to stop publishing. And I have to, you know, give a shout out to San Francisco in terms of, you know, the food culture and food system sort of paradigm. Like, a funny story, the first year of Food Book Fair, a speaker who will remain nameless showed up, and he was getting ready to speak on his panel about food porn. And I said, do you need anything? Can I, you know, do you want some water? You want some coffee? He's like, yeah, coffee would be great. So I brought him a cup of coffee, and he immediately reached into his pocket and he took out three packets, I think, or four packets just like came out of his pocket of Splenda.
Oh, and, God.
But, he knew that there was no Splenda, at the food book fair. And I still have
that. He
was packing Splenda. And I still have that little packet of Splenda from the first year. Because it's
scrap bucket.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there are these things that go unspoken, but, you know, if you're in San Francisco, like, you're just, no one's packing Splenda, you know. It's just, you're talking about, like, are you packing your soy milk or your almond milk? And so, you know, that is happening here in Brooklyn, and it's happening in New York, and it's happening in many other cities all over the U.S., and it's, you know, small towns. Everyone's, you know, thinking a little bit about what they pack. And
Splenda, we love you if you want to sponsor us.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take our money. We'll do a whole panel about it.
Yeah. Worth the discussion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess also in, in hearing you speak about, you know, kind of putting the political edge into Food Book Fair, I guess, how do you come about that as
well,
far as your panels?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to say, you know, food and given that I started this festival, if you open your own restaurant or, you know, you start something that is sort of has a face behind it. And I definitely didn't think about that, but I feel like it's such a personal thing. And so, you know, for me, I grew up in a very political environment, and my family is actually much more active in politics than I am. So I'm actually the more like soft, like foodie of the family that really cares about like cooking delicious food and all sitting down. And, you know, then we get into a lot of debate. And mostly it's, you know, it's a lot of it's talking about climate change issues. And so I guess I feel a little bit like I'm in a bubble, but I really want to open the conversation. And that's sort of a lot of folks say, you know, you should have somebody arguing, you know, pro like factory farming, because, you know, you're clearly just going to attract like a certain group of people that all thinks the same way as you do. And it's sort of like we were talking about food studies, same sort of situation. Which is why I'm really excited about this panel we have that's going to be a debate around GMOs. Mm-hmm. And that is organized by MOFAD, which is the Museum of Food and Drink. And they've just been so incredibly articulate in every component of planning this, where, you know, every panelist has a different point of view. They all come from different backgrounds. And, you know, I think that's sort of something to aspire to for all of our discussions. A lot of the panels come out of media. So, you know, if we hear that a book is coming out, then that means that author is going to be available and they're going to want to come on a Saturday to, you know, talk about it and, you know, come out to Brooklyn, because most of them don't live in Brooklyn. In fact, you know, most people don't really know, like, that there's a hotel, right? A beautiful, gorgeous, like, spot where they can come and talk about things. So we're still sort of getting the word out. And so sometimes panels just come together because a publicist has reached out, and we read the book. And we're like, oh, this is really exciting. The politics side, I think, you know, there's a lot of events in New York that are driven by, you know, activism and nonprofits that create a really safe, awesome space to talk about all these different things and a way to engage and get involved. So we're hoping that people who maybe just want to dip their toe in an issue and maybe they're not going to go out like up to Albany, but they might want to sign a petition, you know, that is talking about like what Monsanto has done to our food system or the fact that, you know, the like rates of obesity in the U.S. are just like beyond what anyone ever thought they could be. It gives them a place to think about it. And then they can sort of go back and maybe do something, you know, exciting for their like personal growth or their, you know, family or their community.
I have a two-part question. First, how are you managing the perception of the food book fair? Because as Jesse kind of pointed out during the break, like most people, when they think food book, they think cookbook. And clearly that's a component, but it's so much more than that. And secondly, who should be coming to the food book fair?
Everyone should come. I answer that first. managing the, I mean, that's, you know, that's about like communications. There's a lot of great people we have that work on like social media, press outreach, you know, trying to sort of hit every angle. I think there's so much that you could come to check out that weekend. So we just hope that people will come to one thing. But it can also be like you look at the schedule and there's like a lot of different things. So I think this year we've focused on, you know, we're doing a pop-up brew pub, for example, with an artist. This artist is out of Portland, Oregon. His name is Eric Steen, and he's commissioned 25 local homebrewers. You know, homebrewing is something they do at home. They do it for their friends. They're certainly not used to doing it, you know, for a group of people or like 100 people or 200 people. He has commissioned all of these homebrewers to make homebrew based on a walk around Williamsburg. So all these beers are inspired by their walk around the neighborhood, and anybody who wants to can come in and try their beer and meet them and learn more about homebrew or, you know, drink a lot of beer and have some fun. So, you know, that's sort of the person that I think is curious about going to food studies, the person who maybe wants to write a book or start a blog or, you know, is interested in writing about food or already, you know, or wants to connect with a community that's in Brooklyn, but beyond Brooklyn and is talking about all these sorts of things. I mean, I think a lot of the people that are on radio here at Heritage Radio Network are the same faces that you will see at Food Book Fair. And it's like, you know, a place where you can connect with all these great people. You can meet them, and it's very laid back.
But you don't have to have a background in food to come and enjoy.
Absolutely not. And like a panel discussion, you know, it's $15. So it's very, very affordable in terms of, you know, food events, and, you know, you'll probably get a beer for, you know, an hour of time with like some writer that you've probably been following their Instagram and, really inspired by, you know, the work that they do, and you want to support them. So
we're going to wrap it up soon, but I want to know, you know, now that you're in your third year with Food Book Fair, I guess what have you learned?
Oh man, we've learned a lot. I mean, I think the kind of work, you know, to produce an event is something that a lot of times, you know, you have like 10 people that are sort of behind the scenes, like running the show. And, you know, I think like the power of the, like the food movement, you know, to call it the food movement, but just not like the political movement, but like the people that really care about making something come together because they just love it so much. Like that, energy or, you know, that sort of passion that exists, I never, ever would have, in my wildest dreams thought, you know, how powerful that could be is that sort of, you know, what Food Book Fair is right now. Like we have amazing people who are essentially, you know, spending hours and hours like flipping through spreadsheets and, you know, shifting their time and their energy so they can be a part of this because they really believe in it. And that in itself has been a huge takeaway. I've learned, you know, a lot of things that I think, you know, in terms of like being a face or being like a celebrity, being a food celebrity, like what that means around that, you know, just watching this evolve and how new it is and yet how I feel so immersed in it. I think, endless learning happening.
Well, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm definitely going, but I don't know where to get tickets.
Okay, well, go to our website.
Okay, I do, but I want you to say that anyway.
So foodbookfair.com, we're powered by the site called Together, T-O-G-A-T-H-E-R. Together.com is our ticketing service. They are running the show. They're awesome.
Can you go to foodbookfair.com to link to that?
Exactly. So go to foodbookfair.com, but I just needed to give a shout out to Together because they've been so great about building a site that works and is really beautiful, and you know they're really excited about the events too. Squarespace, we don't have a Squarespace, but Squarespace is a big sponsor, so I want to thank them for all their support. And you know we have a lot of other great sponsors too. So
great. So is the schedule online? Can we go to the website and check
it's all
what's
there?
Going on?
Everything is okay. There.
I'm here right now.
I
can also see you can follow you guys at Food Book Fair.
Yep, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram at Food Book Fair.
How about Facebook?
Facebook, we're all over the Facebook.
You're all over it.
Algorithms or not, we love it. And hashtag FBF 2014.
Yeah,
and thanks to Heritage Radio Network, who's also been an awesome media sponsor from day one.
Well, we love you.
And you'll be there on site, too.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. We will. And we're very, very, very excited about it. We'll be interviewing some of the authors that are there, and, you know, I'm sure we'll have lots of recaps and great radio pieces that come out of what you guys are doing. So we couldn't be more excited. And Elizabeth Thacker-Jones, ETJ. I want to thank you so much for hanging out with Jesse and I on the morning after, and just congratulations on another year of great success. And thank you for creating this amazing event and continuing to spread awareness and, you know, like you said, the food movement. And best of luck. And we can't wait to see you at the Food Book Fair.
So thank you. April 25th through the 27th.
At the White Hotel.
At the White Hotel, foodbookfair.com.
Great.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.